Hey, PTs, are you maxed out on hours? You tired of endless patient notes? Still chipping away at those student loans? PTLive.me is an on-demand patient clinic hub helping licensed PTs get ahead of the rat race. Stay tuned for more or check out PTLive.me.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
I want to thank everybody out there for tweeting, retweeting, sharing the episodes, and telling some friends about the show. That's how we're spreading the word. Keep it up, share it, and tell a friend, another PT, and let us know who you want to hear from. You can check out all the information online at ptpintcast.com, or you can check us on Twitter or Facebook. On Twitter, it is at ptpintcast. Tonight on the show, she's a physical therapist who specializes in returning women to fitness after injury and pregnancy. She advocates for the awareness of pelvic health issues and fitness and promotes innovative solutions for women through her blog, videos, and social media. She shares her evidence-based, integrative approach internationally with both professionals and individuals through live, online, and DVD educational programs. She is also incurably curious. Tonight on the PT Pintcast, let's welcome Julie Weeb. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So each episode, I try to have a different beer, going with the New Belgium Accumulation. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time out.
Of course. I'm glad to be here.
I spotted some stuff you were putting out on that thing called the Twitter Sphere, and people can check you out online on Twitter at Julie Weeb PT. That is Julie, WIEBEPT. That is your Twitter handle. And the website, julieweebpt.com. Talking about that thing, we brought it up in one of our early episodes. And I think it's the thing that we kind of shy away from. I mean, there's muscles and there's tendons and there's ligaments, there's nerves down there, but you're working in the pelvic floor, that region we kind of usually like look over our shoulder at a lot, and we kind of whisper to each other when we're talking about it. So the question was posed, why should we as PTs care about the pelvic floor? But the thing that grabbed me was you said, you know, it's not just about pee, poop, and sex. It's a powerful ally. So what do you mean by that?
I mean, when I was in PT school, we got a two-hour lecture. I'm curious if it's changed for you, but we got kind of a two-hour lecture about pelvic health or really women's health. And I was in the back tee-heeing with everybody else about all the equipment that they brought. And but I think because of its role in pee, poop, and sex, it does tend to be kind of pushed off to the side. But the reality is that because it is a component of the core, of the deep core system, it has an enormous role to play in our ability to create stability. And stability is part of balance, gait, performance, fitness, any musculoskeletal problem where you kind of identify a core stability contributing factor, then you're actually communicating that the pelvic floor is a part of the problem, and therefore it should also be a part of the solution. And pee, poop, and sex problems aren't the only thing that can go wrong if your pelvic floor isn't integrated into those issues. The pelvic floor actually has a direct physical connection into the lateral rotators of the hip. It actually connects onto the sacrum, so it can help contribute to SI issue. You know, there's all these basic anatomical connections that we just don't even kind of process and think about because we've only learned about its physiologic function. The reality is it has postural control, movement support functions as well, and we can literally add a whole muscle group to your activity, to your musculoskeletal program, to your performance, to your fitness. We can add an entire muscle group to help you perform better, move better, function better. If we'll all just sort of step out of that tee-hee-hee,
right,
that keep it quiet or keep it shameful or keep it funny. I mean, it's funny, but, you know, pee, poop, and sex can be very funny, but there's more to it.
Not the issues surrounding it. I'll bring up an example from a differential diagnosis class that I just took last semester. The patient was clearly having some pelvic floor issues, and the question brought up after every round of new information from our professor, Dr. Venskis, was kind of leading us down that path, and we got to a certain point when most of the people in the class, after each round, were asked, what would you do? Would you treat, and refer? And most of the class just wanted to straight out refer. This person is feeling 7 out of 10 pain. It's clearly something down there. The tee-hee-hee. Most of the class wanted to refer, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or anything, but I kept saying, only because I had talked to some other pelvic health PTs, that's the only reason I was on the treat end of the spectrum, because I heard patients in 7 out of 10 pain, and they're sitting in front of you. Who knows how long it took to get an appointment with you? You're there. You're a physical therapist, and one of the females in the class, I'm not going to name my classmate, said, but you're a guy, and this is clearly a female who's having down there issues. Don't you think it'd be a little weird? And my response was, it's only weird if I make it weird, if I make this situation weird. But I only knew that. I mean, that wouldn't have been my response had I not talked to Carrie Pagliano and Sarah Haig, just some other pelvic health PTs who kind of made me come to grips with, you know, I shouldn't just tee-hee at it. I got to pay attention to it. It's part of the body.
When I first started down this path, because I am not a traditional internal pelvic health therapist, I'm actually what I think of as sort of a new breed, which is an external pelvic health interventionist, because I'm actually, my background is ortho and sports. So I sort of got into this backwards and understood the role of the pelvic floor from a more musculoskeletal global perspective from the get-go. It's taken a while to kind of have my voice sort of be an acceptable part of this world, because for a long time, the standard thought process was, if you're not an internal therapist, you can't say that you treat the pelvic floor. So it's sort of interesting to have these opportunities to try to get a different kind of message out there. I'm very proud of you embracing that part of the body.
Thank you.
It isn't something that we are naturally instructed to have to put into our programming. The place that the pelvic floor has been sort of shooed away from, and it's so interesting to hear about your fellow practitioner, future practitioner's response, because that hasn't changed. That's not new, you know? And I think that what I'm hoping is, and I've sort of been kind of an outsider in this world for a long time because I'm not a traditional pelvic health therapist. I don't do internal work. It's one of those things where we need to give tools to practitioners who are interested, who get it. Like, I love the point that you made that this person's sitting in front of me right now. They need help right now. And yes, they may need a referral. Okay, there are things that are going to be out of my capacity to teach or to treat, I'm sorry, or yours. But Jemmy, if I teach you how to externally intervene, if I teach you that the pelvic floor and breathing are connected, you can intervene with breath. If I teach you that alignment is a part of getting any part of the body working in a different way, right? It's about recruitment. There's just ways that we can intervene that don't necessarily have to include internal work. The point that I want to make is, if you are treating someone who has a pelvis and has a pelvic floor, then technically you're a pelvic health therapist.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
So we all are.
Right. And so I think one of the things that has gotten me into trouble over the years, because it took a while for this to be an acceptable idea that you could do integrative things for the pelvic floor, once got into trouble because I said, well, if you treat women, you're a women's health therapist, because that's sort of what we've always said is that pelvic health is women's health, right? And so when I said that, I got into trouble from a lot of people because I said that we're all women's health therapists. And I didn't mean we're all pelvic health specialists.
Right.
But if you are treating women, which I've worked in regular ortho type practices, they're typically like 60% of most caseloads are females. Mm-hmm. And so if you're treating females, you need to understand the component that the pelvic floor has in their core stability system. You need to understand how pregnancies might impact their ability to set up core stability because that part of their body got impacted by the pregnancy. If you don't understand those physical history components, you may not be able to treat that patient as effectively because you don't understand all that that body has been through to get to you. So to me, if you're treating women, you're a women's health therapist. And if you want to really completely intervene in trunk and pelvic control, which we need in all areas of our jobs, neuro, peds.
You had said before that you're part of a new breed. You're more of an external pelvic floor therapist, and that's kind of a new concept. So besides the obvious, internal versus external, what's the difference between the two?
Trunk and pelvic control is a piece of the puzzle for so many of our patients. You know, the pelvic floor is just a big piece of that. So your question, I'm sorry, was what's the difference between an internal and external? The internal therapists have different skills than I do, meaning they actually can go in internally, they can evaluate directly, they can make make a quantitative assessment of the strength of the pelvic floor. They can intervene directly with manual therapy. They can use internal tools. An internal therapist probably could tell you more about what they do. What I do is more understand the function of the pelvic floor externally. I do palpate the pelvic floor. I do it through clothes. I do it, I call it east of the anus.
And that's a t-shirt waiting to happen.
That is, man. Hashtag it right there.
East of the anus.
East of the anus. You know, you can palpate that. But just like if I was evaluating your knee, I don't have to touch your knee all the time. I can watch you do a step down. I can watch you jump. I can watch you walk. I can watch you run. I can do a lot of things to functionally determine how well your knee or your hip is performing, functioning, right? And so I think that there are tools, and that's one of the things that I teach, and is just like, how do we functionally assess what's going on with the pelvic floor as a part of a system? I think that's the other thing. We've isolated the pelvic floor away from the body and our communication about that, kind of forgotten it's a piece of this puzzle. And we've got to be able to have evaluation techniques that allow us to do that and understand when the pelvic floor might be more involved than we think. Right? And we need to be able to give tools to ortho, neuro, peds, etc., to provide them the ability to bring the pelvic floor into their programming, because one of the issues is that people's programming, musculoskeletal training, is too intense for what their pelvic floor can take. And then they're actually leaking through programs, through rehab programs, simple programs. So we can actually protect people's pelvic health if we educate ortho, neuro, peds in how to integrate it. So that's sort of my take. And really, I think the divide between internal and external is really there. That's just going away. Like, okay. It's really becoming like all of us have stuff to bring to the table that can help people. And I'm not anti-internal on that. And, you know, all that bridging is happening, which is perfect. That's what we need. So
I guess the question is, what do we do to convince the PTs that are either in school right now or coming out or have been out for a while that there really should be no divide between an ortho physical therapist and a pelvic floor physical therapist? Because what I'm hearing from you and other pelvic floor PTs, and I'm using air quotes here, is that there is no difference. And how do we shrink that divide? Is it with education to fellow PTs, or is it education to patients?
It's probably both. First of all, women don't get that there's pelvic floor therapy. They don't understand that there's physical therapy.
They know there's gynecologists. That's pretty much it. Is that what I'm getting at? Is that what we're getting at?
Exactly. And P.S., you know, if your classmate said you're a guy, wouldn't that be awkward? I've had male gynecologists personally. You know, like we don't think anything of it in other areas. And I think it's, you know, it's a natural, but there's dudes with pelvic health problems. And so dudes can treat dudes with pelvic health problems. I think we have a long way to go to educate our fellow practitioners in that regard. Things like this are very helpful. But I think it's really important to understand that there are specialties, and I refer out. I have a PTs here in Los Angeles that when I go, something's not adding up with what I can do, I send them to that pelvic health therapist who can look at them internally. I don't know everything that's going on because I don't have those skills. But here's the deal. We have way too many vaginas and not enough pelvic health therapists, period. Like, it's not a big specialty, and we need more people to be able to identify when it goes beyond what you and me, Jimmy, as orthos can do. But my take is we need orthos and sports medicine folk particularly to triage this for us. So most people come back into the medical system, let's say after they have a baby. It's 10 years later, they've had 3 kids, they leak through their exercise, but so does everybody else in their stroller fitness class. But their problem is their shoulder or their hip. So they don't go, everybody else is leaking, so they don't go seek any help regarding that, but the pain is enough that that'll drive them back in for care, right? So they come and see you for their hip or their shoulder. And if you don't understand that they're leaking and that the pelvic floor is a component of, say, their hip issue, then they're going to leak, keep leaking, maybe never really improve their hip. And you're going to be like, why don't we go get an MRI? And then the doctor's like, well, we could do surgery. You know what I mean? Like, we've never explored.
I'm missing a piece of the puzzle.
Right. So for you and all the other practitioners out there to triage that, to be able to really get comfortable with saying, are you having any issues with leaking? And mom, they may not tell you. But if it's on your intake, add it to your intake. And if you can like start to identify that and say, you know what, I get that you may not want to discuss that with me or whatever. You have to kind of work out your stump speech. But you could say, you know, we're really starting to understand that pelvic health issues in postpartum mommies can contribute to hip problems. So if you ever have any leaking during any of the exercises that I'm giving you, please let me know that. And it should improve alongside your musculoskeletal problem. Your hip pain and your incontinence should change together because those systems are linked. That's what we're starting to understand. That's what the evidence is showing us. And if it doesn't, I have someone I can refer you to.
Okay.
Like, that's how it should work. We should, ortho should be triaging it because there's tons of us, but there's not enough pelvic health therapists to go around. We should be able to identify and treat issues that should be able to respond to that. If they're not improving, get them out to someone who can help more. That's our job. Our job isn't to fix everybody. It's to get them help, whatever that means. Pride aside, I think that to me, that's how we bridge that gap. You know, there are people that are better at knees or better at hips or whatever. If you don't have the right skill set, move them on. There's a lot of education we need to do. That's for sure.
I like it. That's a good first segment. We got into it without just having to talk about pee, poo, and sex. We're going to take a 60-second break. I want to talk a little bit about statistics. You had brought up how we can use them in a manipulative way. And then I want to talk about your courses, how people can find out a little bit more about you, do some stuff live, online, and some DVD educational programs. Because that seems to be the wave of the future where people are going to in terms of how to spread information like this that may not be readily available to you across the world. So we'll take a 60-second break and be back with Julie Weeb on the PT Pintcast.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This is the PT Pintcast.
The PT Pintcast is powered by ptlive.me. PT Live wants you to know you love ortho, but love doesn't always pay the rent. And let's face it, home health is, well, home health. Join PT Live's growing team of on-demand physical therapists working from anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Screen patients, help clinics nationwide, and next date night you can say, have the ribeye, honey. ptlive.me. We'll take it from here.
The PT Pintcast proudly supports the Wounded Warrior Project. Since 2003, the Wounded Warrior Project has been raising funds and awareness for the needs of injured service members, helping injured servicemen and women with aid and assistance, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Their continuing goal is to foster the most successful, well-adjusted generation of wounded service members in our nation's history. To find out how you can help the Wounded Warrior Project, visit them online at woundedwarriorproject.org. Working out his orbicularis oris until failure. DJ, Jimmy McKay on the PT Pintcast.
And we're back in the PT Pintcast with Julie Weeb, a PT. You can check her out online, Julie Weeb PT, or Twitter handle, Julie Weeb PT. That's Julie, W-I-E-B-E, PT. And
even if you spell it wrong, you'll find me.
Really? That's smart.
Yes.
You're redirecting Google searches? That probably happens a lot. It's just spelled a little bit strange in terms of phonetically.
Well, you know, it's me and then actually I think a girl in Germany who puts up her dance videos. So I'm not the dance videos. I'm the other one.
So it's win-win right there.
It is
pelvic
win-win.
Floor PT or dance videos from Germany. Now I've got to look for that. So we talked a little bit about the pelvic floor, and you do some courses that are available either live, online, DVD. So tell us a little bit about that in case someone wants to find out some more information, in case their ears are gone up at this episode.
You can find out information about both my live and online stuff on my website, julieweebpt.com. Right now, there's some stuff up there that are more introductory. For professionals, there is a course on there about female athletes, how I apply this and into a higher level athletic population, specifically how do we manage impact, because we know impact is how most chicks get hurt because they can't control impact. But that is also where we see the most incontinence, and about 50% of elite athletes have incontinence during their athletic performances. So that is what that's about. And then I also have an online course specifically for women, taking them step by step practically, like how do I do this clinically? It's like a toe in the water. I actually consider my courses a gateway drug into the pelvic floor for non-pelvic health people, because it's really just how do you even begin to integrate this? Like how do you even begin? My entire live course will be online. And so I'm hoping to reach more people with these integrative ideas. The pediatric course course, the entire two-day full pediatric course is now online. And so if anybody's interested in how to integrate it into neurological or pediatric populations, that is on there. And we do hope to have a continence module up by February 2. So we are working hard behind the scenes here to get this information into more hands.
Well, if your course is like a gateway drug, then I guess I'm a little bit like a dealer, just giving people a taste. Just give a
little
bit.
You're my pimp, Jimmy.
I'll pimp it out. All right. So you had mentioned before we had had spoken on the show in your latest blog post about the use of statistics in a manipulative way. You're saying if you dig a little deeper, it's about the logic around prescriptive edicts, the things that everybody should embrace, the postpartum, eat paleo, eat vegetarian, where your foot should strike. It's kind of all these all or nothing. Do this, this is the healthiest. Don't do that, this is the unhealthiest. What is the statistical role in all of this?
One of the things that I react to online, it just gets my knickers in such a twist, is that when I do work in more pelvic health and women's health issues, for a little while there was a big stat going around in the women's health. It's not really women's health. It's sort of communicating out to women. Okay. And so that's where I get really uptight. You're asking women who don't really necessarily understand the literature or how research is done or read or understood, you're giving them statistics that are scary. And one of the statistics was that 90% of postpartum women had a diastasis. And a diastasis is that separation of the abdominals. Next time you're in a room with women that have had children, if you ask them to raise their hands, how many of you have a diastasis? You should see 90% of them raise their hands. And that's, I mean, just logically, that's just crazy. And that's not statistically what I see with my patient population. And really, the research shows that 30% of women retain a diastasis after pregnancy. And so I'm not really sure how the 90% statistic started, but it got out there. And then every woman, here's what is 100% true. Most, I can't even say 100%. I hate saying 100%. 90% of women hate their bellies after they have babies. That I can stand behind. That meant that everyone who didn't like their belly suddenly had a diastasis. And so I was seeing a lot of patients that were like, well, I think I have a diastasis because my belly's not flat. That's not how it works. So it became very fear-based. There's a lot of fear-based stuff around some of that. More recently, that has pushed into that information. The way that the internet works, it went crazy viral. And these women were coming to me terrified that they were going to need surgery or they were never going to have a flat belly again or like all the things that they were worried about. And then they didn't know how to exercise. They weren't allowed to do planks. They weren't allowed to do crunches. So how do I get my belly flat? Like, I don't understand how this is supposed to work. And they're all paralyzed. And then along with that came these edicts. You can't do planks. You have to wear a brace right out of the gate. These are the kinds of things. And my most recent blog was because a reaction to another study that came out said that 100% of women had a diastasis at the end of their pregnancy. That was the statistic that got out there. But the reality is that, yeah, you're supposed to open your abs a little bit to have, like, you've got to grow the baby. Like, that's right. What it's there for. And the measure, the bar was anything over 16 millimeters was considered a diastasis. And that's actually a smaller bar than what we consider a normal diastasis. Like, they set the bar super low. So yeah, they got to 100%. But the reality was, after 6 months, about 39% of the women still had a diastasis. But nobody said 39% after 6 months. What they started telling women was that 100% of women have a diastasis at the end of pregnancy, you know, and then it just sets off this panic among women. And we need to just be super careful about how we educate the public and fellow practitioners. Because Look, I read research because I teach. But when I was a clinician early in my career, I didn't have time. I worked hard, 40 hours a week. I mean, not that I'm not working hard now, but it's just a different kind of hard. You're pooped, you got a family, like, you don't have time to, like, pick up a journal, and not everybody has access, and who's got $45
And to synthesize all that information, because if some of it comes out, you lay that information out that you just said in a certain way, and the next thing you know, with social media, that information is going to spread, and you might have clinicians who think that they're telling the patient the latest correct information, but they're not, they're just feeding the machine of this statistical monster.
Yeah. The interesting thing about it is up on my blog, but the interesting thing about the study was there was a ton of crazy cool stuff that they discovered in this study. And one of them was that we say how much weight you gain during the pregnancy determines, like, is a risk factor for getting a diastasis. Exercise is a risk factor for getting diastasis. Not doing exercise is a risk factor for doing diastasis. And how big the baby is. All of these things ended up not having any bearing on who had a diastasis. And that was news. And so was the fact that both the women, the same percentage of women who had diastasis and who didn't have diastasis had low back pain after pregnancy, like at a certain point postpartum. So that's big news, because we say if you have a diastasis, you're set up for low back pain. Like, that's one of the things we say. So, you know, they missed out on this opportunity to really share some information. And that 100% statistic was what I was kind of upset about, was it was actually supporting everyone should brace. Everyone should brace after they have a baby. And I just don't agree with that. I think we need to understand more of what's going on and treat it like a system. Yeah. Your tummy is not the only thing that gets affected by a pregnancy. A lot of people that have a diastasis, that's a fascial issue. That's really where we're kind of moving into. And if you have a fascial issue that is a true issue for a diastasis postpartum, you may have a fascial issue in your pelvis and in your pelvic floor, and that might lead you to a prolapse. And so if you add pressure through a brace through the abdomen, it may exaggerate your prolapse symptoms. So you can't just eat, the eat it cannot be, that's it, you have to put on a brace, because if you tell someone that and then you make their prolapse worse, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Those, we have to balance it out and understand it as a system. And so those are the kinds of information that women need. But all they hear is, I got to get a brace, right? And because I read this article online that 100% of women have a diastasis. I must have a diastasis. I got to go get a brace. And right. Then that leads to other, you know, like, so it's really, and again, it's those blanket edicts.
Feeding the machine. Would it be correct in saying you treat research and information like that a lot like questions in PT school and on the MPTE? Whenever you see never and always, your ears should perk up. It's kind of pay attention to those.
Absolutely. 100%. One of the things, because I do teach, and one of my favorite things to talk about it, people to treat, is actually runners. You know, I don't think everyone should be a 4-foot striker. I don't think everyone should be a mid-foot striker. I don't think everyone should be running barefoot. There's too many variables, and we're all so uniquely structured. There's a range of normal. I really feel like we just need to try to work within the patient's structure, physical history, capacity. There's so much we need to work with there to say that everyone should eat paleo.
Or no one.
Or no one. And then in my world too, no one should lift heavy, or everyone should lift heavy. But if you want to lift heavy, my job's to help you figure out how to do that within your capacity and physical structure and within reason and with wisdom. You know what I mean? So that is such an important message to really kind of take stuff with a grain of salt. It just fascinates me when the people, especially in the weight training world, because CrossFit is such a big deal in the pelvic health world, when people who are like, well, people that want everyone to lift heavy kind of crack me up just as much as the people who say no one should lift heavy. Like, they can't see the middle ground of either of those arguments. Right. You know what I mean? And so I just figure this, the truth is usually somewhere in the middle. And that's sort of where I like to try to walk, even with the pelvic health world and the sports medicine world. The pelvic floor is the big bridge between those two things, because it's part of the core and it's part of pelvic health, obviously. And so if we could all just come to the middle, we can learn from one another and balance all that stuff out and take great sports medicine concepts into pelvic health and pelvic health stuff into sports medicine, and everybody's going to win. And we need to sort it out for our patients that want a 4-foot strike or rear foot strike, or, you know.
The thing I'm taking away from this was something I think I learned in my first semester of PT school. There's normal, and then there's your normal. Air quote normal, and then there's your normal. And we need right. to pay attention. So we're not doing PT on everyone or no one. We're doing it on the person in front of us. We need to pay attention to that.
That's such a great way to start. And actually, one of my first experiences at my first clinical rotation, I was actually on a neurological adult neuro rotation. My CI had sent me in to do an eval, and I was I was like reading up on the circle of Willis, because it was a circle of Willis stroke that this person had. And she was like, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm trying to predict, like, I'm such a nerd. I was like, I'm trying to predict what I'm going to see based on what part of the circle of Willis has been affected. And she was like, get up and get in there and treat what you see.
Go look at the patient.
Treat what you see. That was one of the most important lessons I've ever learned. Like, you need to go in there and see what's up, find out where they are, and then take them to where you want them to be. But you got to start where they are. Like, it was just the most important lesson I've ever had. And so anyway, yeah, I'm right there with you. We kind of forget that we're dealing with people, like a person. One unique structure, one unique person who has not just a physical history, but an emotional history surrounding their physical history that we need to be honoring. There's just a lot more to it than like, just squeeze your abs. just hit with your forefoot. It just isn't that simple. I wish it was. I wish there was a, I really wish that it was that simple, but it's just not. So
yeah, you can check out more information about Julie and Julie's courses online, juliewiebpt.com. That's Julie, WIEBEPT.com. Or if you misspell it, you'll just watch some German girl dancing online.
Awesome.
Twitter handle is the same thing, JulieWiebPT. It's been a cool look. I think this is an area that's not had a lot of light on it in terms of pelvic floor, and now I think it's being more and more talked about by some outgoing PTs like yourself, like Sarah Haig, like Carrie Pagliano, and I think that's only going to help further the discussion about another part of the body that we as PTs say we're experts in, and we should be experts in. So, well, we appreciate the conversation, and I hope it's not the last time we talk.
Score. Very good. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.